Ready whenever you are,
though. Well, dos, tres.
Tourette's?
Okay. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Armchair Producers. My name is George Terran, and I am joined, as always, by the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Travis Croft. How are you, good sir?
I am fine and dandy this evening.
And dandy.
So this lovely summer evening out here at the world-famous Fried Brand Studios.
Mm-hmm. A little bit more animalistic than normal, what with having Archimedes and Riley. But we've also got Suki, the silent partner, and the introduction of the three-legged wonder, Mr. Charles. Mr. Charles.
To be safe, a three-legged dog can still run, it's just got to learn to run different.
Yes, and the three-legged cat can still claw the fuck out of you.
And move quite quickly.
Yes, absolutely.
It's like having a small xenomorph in a house.
That's actually really quite accurate. Except this particular one does like to escape and burrow into your armpit. So.
Instead of out of your
stuff. Yeah.
Important difference.
Will consume your warmth. So... We've got a show for you. Who knows whether it's going to be good or not? Time will tell. But I want to remind you, first and foremost, that you can be part of this little shindig by joining the Facebook group at friedbrainproductions.com or the Facebook group friedbrainproductions.com/group/friedbrainproductions and or follow us on Twitter at EvilTrav or at TheFriedBrain. Lastly, for all you non-Apple heathens, Armchair Producers is now available on SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Wooshka. So if you could do us a favour, subscribe on any and all of these channels and give us a review, that'd be awesome. Share the show, and it can be for people that might actually like it, or for, you know, great
anyone you'd like to annoy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we regularly send copies in the diplomatic bag to our friend Donald in the US.
Mm-hmm. As well as we always make sure that we touch base with
Kirk. It's Kirk, yeah.
Yes.
This is Kirk as we call him around here.
Yeah,
you know, first name basis. We have many conversations with Kirk. I mean, usually they're fairly one-sided, but...
Well, it's the same kind of conversation you had with God.
Exactly. You don't necessarily need an answer, and those who ask for it just lack faith.
Exactly. It's almost as if Kirk Cameron responded to us is a perfect analogy of God and all religion.
Should we start a new religion based around Kirk? Cameronism. And would that make him maybe like his wife or his sister was on Full House?
Sister.
Candice. Mm. Cameron, it'd be like the father and the sister and, you know,
and the father and the son and the holy shit.
And the holy sitcom.
Of course, that voice that you heard just then was our associate producer, the lovely Shay.
Which was, it was Growing Pains was Kirk Cameron, not Charles in Charge, wasn't it?
Yes.
Growing Pains, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
Is that the one of Alyssa Milano?
Oh, Shay?
Sorry?
Alyssa Milano, which sitcom?
He's the boss.
There's so many. Charles in Charge, Growing Pains, Who's the Boss, it's Full House, I just might only did the Family Ties. Where are the film reboots of these shows? Like, who would you cast as Alex Keaton in the Family Ties reboot movie?
That's a tough one.
This is just off the cuff, by the way, people.
Yeah. God damn it, I wrote a script.
Daniel Radcliffe.
Maybe? Or,
can he do a convincing American accent?
Kind of. Have you seen Horns?
I haven't seen anything Radcliffe has ever done.
He's actually good. Like, I watched Swiss Army Man. He's good in that.
It wasn't a conscious decision, apart from the conscious decision to never see Harry Potter films. Well, it wasn't a conscious... It's like, it's not interested.
You're just a soulless human being?
I'm just not interested in a boy wizard in children's books. but, you know, I hear he does some interesting stuff. No, I did. He saw the one where he played the poet.
Oh, Killing Your Darlings or something?
Something like that. He didn't play, like, I mean, like a 50s beat poet. Was that Ginsberg or something?
He had the same guy from Chronicle in it. Dan DeHaan or whatever his name was, yeah?
Oh, I can't remember. I was actually watching a story the other day about Josh Trank, and I was talking about Chronicle, and I remember liking it, but that's about all I remember about that film.
Yeah, I've watched it twice, I think, and it's like, yeah, it's fine. It's kind of like an alternative version of... I mean, Max Landis wrote the script, and he's pitched his idea of a Power Rangers movie a couple of times, and it's very similar. And the Power Ranger movie that came out, it's kind of similar as well, just a little bit more goofball.
I heard it sucked.
And it was fine.
He, of course, Max Landis, going completely off topic, writer of Bright, which you quite liked recently.
I thought it was fine. And he is also, how about this, ladies and gentlemen? It's a segue that works into what we've been watching, because I decided to session the rest of season one and all of season two of Dirt Gently Holistic Detective Agency on Netflix.
Starring Elijah Wood, yes.
Elijah Wood, yes, as well as Samuel Becker, I think his name is, as Dirk Gently, and a couple of familiar cameos and things, like in the season one, one of the main, I can't remember fucking names, one of the guys from Battlestar Galactica, the kind of the engineer dude.
I've never watched any of Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, it's good.
I tell a lie, I think I watched the first episode and I was like, this looks like crap.
It's good.
And it didn't even have that 70s kitschy, bad special effects charm.
It had good special effects.
And what else do I remember? It had that woman in it who was in Sneakers and she played the president.
Oh, Mary McDonald. Yeah.
That's the one.
Also played Donnie Darko's mother.
So he goes, like, you sort of put a face to a particular film and go, she's the chick from that, forevermore. Yeah, I guess there are probably Battlestar Galactica fans out there going, no! She's the president from Battlestar Galactica, you shouldn't remember from that crappy 90s movie with Robert Redford in it.
I kind of like that movie.
I liked it.
It was a fine blockbuster.
I noticed John Hannah is in that show.
Yes, he is one of the main bad guys in season two, and he's a mustachio-twirling wizard. Dark wizard, and he does it very well.
Can I take a step back here for a second? I don't know what the fuck this show is.
Okay, so Holistic Detective Dirk Gently investigates cases involving the supernatural. Now, this is not really a good description, because there is no such thing as a good description for Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. It is dealing with the idea of predestination, fate, changing fate, supernatural elements, spirituality, and so much. And it's a slog to watch.
A slog? Is that in... Well, it's got a very good rating on IMDb of 8.4 out of 10. So are you just saying... Are you disagreeing about it? Or are you just saying it's endured rather than enjoyed?
Endured and enjoyed. Probably endured more than I enjoyed, just because it's kind of, if you've ever heard Max Landis in an interview, he has basically fired his brain at a page and got people to film it. So if you know the storyteller of this series, it makes sense, and you can kind of follow along. And I've had a few kind of movies of his that I've watched, and I've read a couple of his superhero comics and stuff that he's done, and I've listened to quite a few interviews and things, thanks to Kind of Funny. And it's... I get it. I don't necessarily like it. And especially, I don't like it for extended periods of time. He's kind of abrasive and obtuse with his attitudes and storytelling. And it's kind of good because it's single-bloody-minded in that it's his, boom, boom, boom. Nothing will ever change that. But at the same time, if you can't get on that train at the start, you're not going to enjoy it. Because you're going to be dragged along and you are going to want to cut your own leg off to get away.
Or you just stop watching, I think, would be a preferable option.
Yeah, it's... No, come on. You have to go to extremes for these people to understand. It's a very different interpretation of the character of Dirk Gently.
Is this based on a book or a graphic novel? Or
A series of books by Douglas Adams. Obviously famous for... it's very much a kind of bastardization of that character in every way. We're just going to quickly pause because the all the pets magnificent are all going to be coming up at the same time. Why?
Sorry, I don't want him to hurt the little guy. I don't think he would, but better safe than sorry. No, stay.
It's alright. There we go. Okay, I'll hold on to you.
Good boy. Good boy.
While we chat. Okay, there we go. It's okay. You got your big bristly tail on. You're trying to make yourself all big, but you've got one leg missing. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if you hear some purring or meowing, that's going to be Charles right here. So don't gently.
So what you're saying, it's tough to recommend.
Yeah,
it's so really hard to recommend. If you're on board of it, you're going to be on board 100%.
Yeah, if you don't like the first 20 minutes of episode 1, you will fucking hate the rest of it.
How does this compare to, say, something that's like in a slightly similar vein to, say, Grimm?
Totally different. Grimm has its own kind of spin on fairy tales and things like that and creatures from that environment, but it's still much more of a generic TV show, start, middle, and end. Whereas this, it's interweaving stories where it's like, what the fuck? Why is there a shark trapped inside a kitten? What the fuck? And it does all, to Max's credit, it all comes together and does make sense at the end of it, but it's, you have to have dropped acid to fully appreciate it. It's bizarre. So it's a well-created show. It looks good. It's acted well. Once you've experienced the whole story, going back and kind of re-watching an episode is kind of fun because you can see some hints and you can see the kind of the magic behind the curtain, so to speak. But, oh boy, can't really recommend it unless you are a big, big fan of Max Landis. Yeah.
I only reason I know him is, like I said, he wrote Bright, which has been in the news recently, and I assume he's related to John.
Yeah, his son.
So, who, kind of, when you look at his career, you go, wow, there's a man who peaked early.
John Landis.
I don't think he's made a decent film since the 80s.
Yeah.
But there they are. I still know the name, though. When you make a film as good, I guess, as you know, the Blues Brothers, you know, you get your, you know, you are remembered.
Yes.
And we don't mention the Blues Brothers 2000.
La 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 la.
It never happened.
There's a couple of movies that never happen. another thing that I've decided that I'm going to try and do is try and just watch other movies that aren't necessarily in my wheelhouse or anything that are from actors, writers, directors, producers whose work I do like. Like, I'm a big fan of Zach Braff, love him in Scrubs, and I think he's been really good in quite a few things, like his directorial debut for Garden State. Really love that movie.
There's possibly the most overrated film of this century.
Oh, it was crazy when people were kind of saying, oh, it's going to get Oscars, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, it's a fine little indie film.
It's a film with a good soundtrack that's rather boring.
I like it. But
what is Zach up to? Because, like, I have not seen Zach Braff since Scrubs.
Well, he actually had a movie come out that he directed with Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman, and Alan Arkin in Going in Style. A caper movie with old jets. The premise is, it's a remake of a 1968 movie, I think it is, that's set in Las Vegas. But this one, the premise is Michael Caine. Fucking noise. We have a polished podcast here, ladies and gentlemen. So there's Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman and Alan Arkin. They all work for a steel mill, and they're on the pension. And life's getting tough, financially speaking. Blah blah blah. They then find out that the steel mill is basically reneging on all pensions and things like that. Michael Caine is at the at his bank, and it gets robbed. And it plants the idea in his mind of robbing a bank, and so he convinces these other two to do it so that they are going to steal the equivalent from the bank of what their pensions were worth. And and it's actually really quite good. It's not a great movie. Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman and Alan Arkin are going to be remembered for far better roles, but it is a very competently put together movie. I kind of liken it to Inside Man, in that, you know, Spike Lee, he's known, he's got his style, and then he came out with this very generic action movie, and it's like, okay.
Do you think Inside Man's a generic action movie?
Yeah.
I would completely disagree with that characterization.
Really?
It, in no way is that an action film. There's very little action in it.
It's paced like an action film.
And paced like an action film, but it's, I would say, I definitely agree that if you were a Spike Lee fan, to see him come out with what I would rather call a heist film, though, because that's what it is, about a bank robbery.
Yeah, yeah.
And very cleverly written, I think, and very cleverly put together film about a bank robbery.
It's got a good premise to it.
It's very different to what his normal sort of very social commentary.
Yeah.
We talked last week, black cinema, if you want to use that description, you know, films like Do the Right Thing.
Exactly.
Jungle Fever. Very, very, very different kind of storytelling. But, I mean, all the same, I can... It's certainly not what you would expect it of him.
Yeah. So this I would kind of put in a similar bracket, because people who know Zach Braff's style, they know that he has, even from his Scrub days, it's always been kind of quirky, mild comedy with a bit of drama thrown in, and just slightly offbeat. And that's what this is, but it's much more kind of neutered to something like Garden State or the other movie that I watched of his, which he co-wrote and directed, Wish I Was Here. But I like Zach Braff. I like his style. It works for me. It's kind of, I don't know, I'd say kind of early Wes Anderson style of whimsy and quirkiness, but put through the lens of someone from San Francisco.
I recall him getting a bit of publicity a few years ago when he raised a metric shit ton of money on, I think, Kickstarter for one of his films.
He kind of co-funded it with Kickstarter, and that was Wish I Was Here. He, I think he put forward $2 million of his own money, or he put forward the bulk of it and asked for $2 million. He ended up getting $3 million. And some people were a little bit kind of pissed off about that, because they thought, oh, it's Zach Braff, he should be able to fund it himself.
Well, I mean, I guess TV gigs, even good ones that go for about 10 years, don't necessarily pay that well. And plus, there's that old rule in cinema, don't spend your own money.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I think it was good, because it was done on a budget. It was done with his friends. Like, there's cameos by Donald Faison, which obviously he's got one of the most famous kind of bromances in Hollywood, next to Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart.
Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson.
Yeah. And then it's also got Jim Parsons from
Big Bang Theory.
Yes, thank you.
One of the most highly paid people on television.
Yeah. Or at least he was. I don't know if he still is. I imagine that he is.
No, they still make that. They still make that drink.
Oh, for God's sake. Destruction. Riley, go downstairs.
Come on, go. Go.
Shoot. Ask Shay if he can have some ham. So I really enjoyed them, but similar to Dirk Gently, where you kind of have to be invested in the creative mind behind it, I could eat more easily at promote these and say, oh, give it a try, because it is easier to get into than Dirk Gently, but it's still more of a niche market.
I mean, it's kind of a way I choose films these days. You sort of go, I liked what the guy did last time. And I'm usually more talking a writer, probably even more commonly a director.
Mm.
But even then, like, I like what Darren Aronofsky's done today, but I'm still very reluctant to go near Mother, just due to the reactions that people have had to it.
I really want to see that. I think I'll like it, but I think it'll be much like most of his movies, where they're confrontation.
I guess when I come to it, I really liked Pi. I really, really fucking liked Requiem for a Dream. That's one of the greatest films ever made.
Yeah.
I really liked Black Swan. Mm-hmm. I think we disagree on The Fountain.
I really like The Fountain.
It doesn't make any sense to me. And I never got around
the
to
see... or my logic.
No. Look, I mean, film's subjective. I've never got around to seeing Noah.
No, me neither. That got kind of panned, so...
Well, I always recall a friend of mine said, I'm not seeing it. My pastor told me not to see it. He said it's not biblically accurate. I had a bit of a giggle. I'm like, sorry, are you saying that a giant boat really did transport all the fucking animals on Earth?
I'm curious as to seeing whether that pastor had a problem with Evan Almighty.
Oh, yeah. I guess the story, in fairness to the religious figure, I don't think Evan Almighty or Bruce Almighty were trying to tell a literal Bible story. Whereas I think, you know, Aronofsky kind of sort of was.
Yeah, kind of sort of maybe was. I think he was possibly angling it for the same kind of reaction and response to Passion of the Christ.
Yeah, well, and that's the kind of thing that kind of set the mark. It was a huge market for people who were going to make religious films. Our mates who at I remember the name of the company, Purity Films or whatever it is, made the God's Not Dead series. Yeah. Third one coming out
soon.
This year, which Washed Up Star will be in it. There'll be a pot, there'll be a prize pool at the end of it for the person who gets it right. There's a market for it, and he didn't get it because it was people queuing in that group. Speaking of Netflix, which seems to be the place to go for, I guess, new television these days, not really a great time of year for a new TV on the old free-to-air channels.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a show on... It's just started on Netflix, which has a ridiculously high... I think it's got 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Or did. It's got a very, very good rating on IMDb as well. Mm. It's called The End of the Fucking World. I can say fucking. Netflix can't, apparently.
Well, they can't write it.
They can't write it either, no. That is our good friend Charles Xavier playing with my headphone cord. Thank you for that. I'll take that.
Yes. One day he will bite through the power cord and then he won't do it again.
For all the wrong reasons, apparently. This is a very unusual little show. It's British.
Mm.
It's
like 22-minute episodes?
22 very bite-sized episodes. Mm. The first episode, I think, is like 17. They're 25-minute episodes, which is odd for a Netflix-produced series. Mm. But it stars probably the only person of note is the young man who plays the main character, James Alex Lawther. I may be pronouncing it incorrectly. Lawther. And I think you probably, those who know his face, might know him best for having played the role of Kenny in an episode of Black Mirror from last season, which was Dance? I can't remember the name of it.
More on that later.
But Start Up and Dance,
okay.
Which was one of the best episodes of last season. He plays the character of James, who thinks he might be a psychopath.
Okay.
And the first episode introduces us to him and the reasons why he thinks he might be a psychopath. Mm-hmm. And you sort of walk away going, yeah, I can see that.
Alright.
And he is sort of thinking, he's been killing small animals, and just sort of running amok.
Okay.
He is thinking about actually planning a killing a human being. When he sort of plans and life and world are turned upside down by the arrival at school of a young girl named Alyssa, played brilliantly by Jessica Barden, who I've actually never heard of before.
I have, in Hammer.
There's a film I saw, but I don't remember so well. I've got to be honest, I looked at this when I saw this, I was watching it yesterday, and I'm like, fuck me dead, she's 25? She plays a 17-year-old in this, and you're like, wow, she has a baby face.
Yep.
She really doesn't look it. So these two, she's almost as crazy as he is, but in a different way. Okay. Wildly impulsive. Right. And sort of convinces him to go to steal his dad's car and go on a cross-country road trip.
Okay.
And chaos ensues.
It sounds a little bit like... a young teen version of Bobcat Goldthwait's God Bless America.
That was certainly one of the things that came to my head, was God Bless America. And I was going to bring it up, but I was actually questioning bringing it up because I was thinking, I don't know too many people who would have actually seen that film.
Great film.
Don't get me wrong, it's fucking fantastic. And the fact that Bobcat's actually turned out to be quite a decent director after doing that character character in the Police Academy films. But
was in Scrooge.
Well, it's a long time. Has anyone seen Scrooge? Probably as many people who've seen...
Shay loves it.
Oh, it's a great film, but it's file under God Bless America as a film that not enough people saw. The other thing it kind of made me think of was a young teen version of Natural Born Killers. Sort of like the Mickey and Mallory. Is it Mallory? It's been a long time since I saw that film. Character, sort of that relationship between the two of them. I'm only two episodes in, and I went in expecting to hate this because it sounds really stupid.
Yeah.
but
it's winning.
It's actually, I don't know. It's certainly not a show I found I could smash.
Okay.
You know, where shows you go, I could just crush that. Like, I mean, I think I talked. Late last year, I smashed Mindhunter in a weekend.
Oh, yes.
Not a problem. You wanted to watch the episode, next episode. This one, I got through two episodes last night. And I kind of felt like I needed a break between them. But that's not to say that they're dark or heavy. I mean, obviously, it's a dark subject matter. He's constantly having fantasies about killing Alyssa, despite the fact they're getting along quite well. it's dark subject matter, but it is comedically presented. But I don't know what it's hard to describe. It's interesting television. It's certainly the kind of show that would never have been made before a service like Netflix.
Yeah.
Even in Britain, which I think has, a more...
It's got a bit more of a history of doing that kind of stuff.
You've got a little bit more freedom to move on British television than you do in the US. So US television, I always find it very ironic, as one of these countries has a constitutional... guarantee for free speech.
Yeah.
And they have, despite that, they would actually, if you look at more television, have far more regimented speech on television than Britain or Australia. You can have the word fuck on Australian television after 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
I don't think it's allowed at all on free to air US television. So I could see, you can make a challenging television show in Britain, but I just don't think a show about a young psychopath. He goes across, basically makes it in a young teenage delinquent going on a cross-country crime spree kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is one of the great things about, I guess, why we're in the golden age of television now, is that people who create this kind of stuff have the freedom now to make incredibly challenging TV shows. And
it's kind of interesting looking at the evolution of television, as you called it golden age television, and I don't think I'd disagree with that, but at the same time, when you think back to like the 50s and 60s and 70s, there's like iconic shows that, that was an era of golden age of cinema, but it is just, the medium itself has evolved so much, and especially with streaming services where basically, everything available to watch is now entirely a la carte. And you can sign up here, there, everywhere, and watch whatever you want at the leisure that you want and watch it. You can watch The End of the Fucking World at 9 a.m. in the morning if you want to. You are not restrained to 10:30 at night on Channel 4 on Friday nights when everyone's already out of the pub, getting drunk, or gone to bed. It's so much freer and easier. So it's...
It certainly went for... It'll be an interesting question for debate. Obviously, I wasn't alive in the 50s.
Oh, no.
So, I mean, I don't know, I feel like they're iconic because they were the first ones who did it.
No, absolutely, yeah. And just the quality of the productions, no matter how kind of... how highly held shows like I Love Lucy and I Dream of Jeannie and fucking Seinfeld, you look at them and it's like, they're dated in the way that they are filmed and the way that they are distributed and everything. They're iconic for their time. They were the gold standard then, but the medium has changed. Everything has evolved. I mean, the watershed moment for movies was Citizen Kane. The fact that Orson Welles did shit with a camera and moved the camera through a window into a scene and stuff. People thought, what the fuck is this? It was revolutionary, and people hated it. It bombed when it first came out, but now it's considered the birth of modern cinema. But then when you look at it now, you can still appreciate it for what it did compared to what it did before, but now it's so out of date.
It's actually not a terribly interesting film.
Yeah.
It's like if you're a film geek, you can look at that. Like, I'm going to watch it with Trudy one time, and she's like, why did people fucking lose their shit about this?
Mm.
I'm like, okay, look at this scene. This film's scene's using deep focus.
Yeah.
So what the fuck is deep focus?
Yeah.
It means I can see the face of a guy at the back of a picture, you know, like in deep focus. It's like, well, okay, who cares? I'm like, what's in the middle of that scene?
Mm.
That's an ice sculpture. You know what it takes to do deep focus? It's an incredible amount of light.
Mm-hmm.
There must be so many fucking lights in that studio he's shooting that scene in. And he put a fucking ice sculpture in the middle.
Yeah.
And she just, how cool is that?
Yeah.
And so much heat from those lights, and he's cool enough to, and like,
yeah.
She's looking and goes,
the layperson is like, I don't fucking care.
And I'm like, yeah, exactly. She's like, why is that interesting?
Which is a very, very fair point.
But yeah, it's just that only, yeah, it's for film geeks only these days, I would say. Yeah. It's not his best work. If you like Orson Welles, there are probably better things to watch. But
to get us back on track, I mean, the end of the fucking world, and what I was talking about before with Dirk Gently, they are definitely kind of byproducts of the Wild West of streaming service broadcasting that we're in now. And it's great. It's all the better for it, because they're interesting stories that not necessarily everyone's going to get, but people are rolling the dice on these slightly more obscure projects.
You don't like this one? There's a good place.
Yeah.
It's much lighter.
Mm.
You don't like that? There's a fucking... You think that's too hardcore for you? They've rebooted Full House.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, it's...
You've got so much choice.
It's not like... Yeah, they don't have to be everything to everyone.
Mm.
Which I think is the great benefit. So I know it's a tangent from a show like this, but I'm just saying... This is how I think is an interesting example of why I think the streaming services do so well, and why I'm glad I'm alive today to see it.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not saying this is the best show I've seen all year. No. It's good.
Yeah.
It's, I like that the episodes are in bite-sized pieces, and I'll probably go back for a little bit more. Mm. It's interesting. I'll be interested to see what I've never heard of the writers and directors before, so good luck to them. I think they'll do very well with this and get a lot of attention.
See what happens next. Do you want to talk about Black Mirror? Because I feel like you really want to talk about Black Mirror, but you won't like what I have to say.
No, I know you don't. I've had to think about this. So let me start with a proposition. So here's the proposition. George does not like Black Mirror as much as I do. Do you like it at all?
It's fine. It's just not for me. It's not for me at all. It kind of reminds me of a lot of... I can't think of specific examples, but in the mid to late 80s, there was a lot of bleak TV in the UK. Particularly stuff like, there was Sir John Mills, an old, fantastic old actor. He did it was a bizarre release, because it was four episodes, but they merged together to make a movie. It was kind of like what Futurama did with their the four films that they did, where there were actually three episodes and they kind of stapled them together to make a movie. It was called the Quatermass. And Quatermass is an old kind of legacy character in the same vein that like Van Helsing and all of those there, and John Carter and all of that. They're kind of forerunners for the modern sci-fi era. It's ridiculously fucking bleak. It is so goddamn bleak. It's basically, if you kind of got the John Hurt version of 1984, distilled it down to as bleak a material as you possibly could, throw in more sci-fi rather than imperialistic kind of overlord element, and film it on a ridiculously low budget, but it still kind of all works because everything is just firing on all cylinders.
In the near future, civilization is broken down to the barest fragment of recognizable life. Young people are forming gangs and dominating the wrecks of cities like London. But the strangest Earth children are the planet people, following plum bobs to sacred sites waiting to be taken up. Professor Quatermass, seeking his granddaughter, teams up with Joe Capp, who is trying to analyze strange signals from space using the last working pieces of electronic equipment. They find a planet people at a nearby stone circle. A light appears, a signal appears, and the hippie children are gone.
Yeah.
Russian plot, Nirvana, or something altogether more sinister.
Yeah, it's
fucking... It has a 7 on IMDb.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's really weird. And that... Every time I've watched... Like, I've watched all of season 1 of Black Mirror. I watched the first episode of season 2, and then I just thought, no. I decided to watch the first episode of season 4 of Black Mirror. And all of them, no matter the setting, they all take me back to that same place where they're really confrontational, really challenging, not enjoyable unless, like Dirk Gently, you are in it from the get-go.
But each episode's different, though.
I just...
Have you watched San Junipero?
No.
You cannot comment on the show, then. I am fucking serious. Until you've actually watched San Junipero, you what, haven't actually...
Season 3, right?
Season 3, you actually haven't seen the full spectrum of what Black Mirror is capable of.
No, I haven't watched San Junipero. I have watched the first episode of season 3. That's the one with Bryce Dallas Howard. Yeah?
Yes, and that actually pissed a lot of people. I can't fathom people telling me they don't like this show because it is utter perfection. But I would like to start out with a proposition.
Mm.
I've had to think about this because I know you're not as keen on it as I am. Mm. You don't like science fiction.
Oh, no, I fucking...
No, I don't think you do. I think science fiction is a spectrum.
They're okay. They're just sniffing each other.
Science fiction is a spectrum, but obviously there's hard, or there's pure science fiction on one side. I think you skew far on the other side. You prefer fantasy. And science fiction, fantasy world. So let's take the comparison you gave me on Facebook recently, which is Electric Dreams, the Philip K. Dick series, which I actually quite like as well.
Yeah.
But that isn't science fiction. That's science fiction fantasy. So I'm sounding like somebody who's saying, so you don't actually like metal, you like thrash metal, instead of the British New Wave of metal.
Kind of referring to, I guess, like feasible science.
I guess what I like about it so much. Like
forethought of science as it is today projected.
What I enjoy most about it is, and I had to think about it, the science fiction I enjoy the most, is where I look at it and go, I can see our world in that. And I can see, it's what I like so much about Black Mirror is, quite aside from the stories I think being well-written, well-made, and entertaining, is they are a warning from the near future. It's almost like if someone made a story in 20 years' time, or if someone made a story now, and sent it back about what the internet could be, and sent it back to 1990, and said, we've got Russian bots influencing elections, so fucking orange despots win US elections. People believe in whatever they fucking want to believe in because they can find a new source that tells them that their beliefs are true. Mm. So the technology has a dark side. Technology's always had a dark side, and that's what Black Mirror is telling stories about. This is the dark side of the tech that we're now worshipping is changing the world. And this is like, sort of said, think 20 years from now, in 2038, if someone made a documentary about, in this case, let's say, the total history of us, the little kernels that people stick in their heads, record all their memories.
The grain.
Yeah. The dangers of what VR could become if you go back to the USS Callister, which is episode 1 of season 4.
See, I thought that the dangers of VR was done way better in season 1.
Season 1, the first episode was the National Anthem.
I think
that was the pig one. The third one was the Complete History of Us.
Was it? Am I?
Are you thinking of the gaming one in season 3?
Maybe.
Where the guy goes and tests the game?
Yeah.
That was season 3.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, I thought that was way better.
That was more about gaming, more so than, I guess, a bit...
But just the kind of the element of fear of not being able to escape that kind of thing.
Playtest that
it
one
was. Yes, it was way better in that there was it was too pedestrian in USS Callister.
I think it was saying more than just the VR though. I think it was actually making social comment as well. In that it was actually a story about toxic masculinity and cyberbullying and that sort of thing. We're wrestling with some of it. Aside from, people could use Sphere for some fucked up shit. But I think that was the kind of story it was trying to tell. And again,
I didn't really get that.
I'll watch it again then. It's so there though. It's got this guy is fucking copying his colleague. So for guys who haven't seen it, USS Callisto, we should probably give him a little context.
Yeah. we jumped straight into it.
A woman wakes up on a Star Trek-esque ship with a cute crew, praise her all-knowing and fearless captain. Mm. We have a Mark Zuckerberg-esque guy who's invented something that looks a little bit like the Oasis in Ready Player One. It's like an all sort of a multi MMORPG style VR world.
Mm.
He's got his own little offshoot of it at home, which is based around a popular Star Trek show. He takes DNA samples from his female and male colleagues, recreates their characters in game where they become almost self-conscious, self-aware copies of himself in game, and he basically tortures them in game to basically boost his own ego. Especially the female characters who he has no way of approaching or no chance with in real life.
Every mission they have to kiss him, basically. Yeah. I got it, but for me that it was just muddied by just everything else around it. It was perfectly good, and I can see that there were rumors that they're going to do a spin-off of this as its own show, from where this kind of picks up, and it's like that would be kind of cool. The last part of this episode, where they get onto the kind of online portion of it and their first interaction with someone else, that was fucking better than the whole fucking hour that came before it.
I disagree. I was glued. I could not take my eyes off it.
I was bored.
It was so good. It was telling us something about this, you know, this kind of, again, this toxic online masculinity that we've seen come through again and again with, you know, Gamergate and all that sort of thing of these guys who have got, you know, no idea. Sort of, Riley, come here. Sorry, it's our co-producer Riley making a hell of a lot of noise. Interestingly, I like that part as well. Did you catch the voice?
I recognised it, but I don't know who it was. It was
Aaron Paul.
Oh, of course.
I'm very, very disappointed he didn't say, "Get out of my sector, bitch." This is to go back to my point, is that, so I feel like what Black Mirror tells us, the Black Mirror universe is the world as it could be in 10 or 20 years. And I think that's the best kind of science fiction to me. And I think that's genuine science fiction, is telling a story about something that could actually be, as opposed to Star Wars, which I don't think...
Oh, that's science fantasy.
Science fantasy. So I'm not saying you wouldn't ever watch science fiction, but I feel like your tastes skew more to the science fiction fantasy side of it, as opposed to... You're more Wars than you are Trek.
Yes. I'm more Wars than I am Trek, but... I really do like a lot of the older Star Trek. Like, the Next Generation is fucking awesome. Deep Space Nine was really cool, but it was outclassed by Babylon 5. Babylon 5 is fucking awesome. Just deal with it.
I didn't get it. That old Farscape.
What?
Didn't get that old Farscape.
I really love Farscape, but I love puppets.
Come on.
Thinking about their whole idea of science fiction, like hard-boiled science fiction, I think of Children of Men. That is one of my favourite fucking movies of all time. It is impeccable.
A perfect example of what I would consider, again, looking at the world and going, that could be us in 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't make sense to me, but someone can't look at Black Mirror and go, this is the world of technology, it's showing us the dark side of that.
Doesn't it scare you a little bit? No, not really. Because I honestly don't think that there's actually going to be much pushback. I think that there is going to be all this really dark, horrible stuff, but there already is. It's just a little bit more cloak and dagger. This is putting a bit of a spotlight on certain areas of paranoia, playing up that. I think that, you know, the idea of, you know, go back 10 years... and all the shit we can do with our phones, and the fact that we can follow people and we can see where they are. That's creepy as fuck, but no one fucking cares, because it's like, I don't care. It's like the it's fucking South Park, the Sentai Pod episode where they, you know, always read the fucking terms and conditions.
Oh, I agree. I think that's kind of the point that Black Mirror makes. If you look at Nosedive.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bryce Dallas Howard episode, yeah, where, you know, you have to rate every social interaction you have,
yeah,
out of 5 stars.
Yeah.
And your average star rating can affect where you're allowed to work, how much,
yeah,
you pay for a home, what your kind of cars you're able to rent, the social circles
mm,
you can move in. I mean, that's not too far from the world we live in today. It's a bit exaggerated.
Oh, it is very exaggerated.
There's
always going to be the counterculture.
Yes, but I mean, there was a counterculture in that episode as well. The truck driver who picks us up at the end, and they come.
Yeah.
There was almost a society outside of society who refused to take part in that. But
exactly,
there is
there's just the storytelling of it that I, you know, if these were done as feature films and they were more cautionary tales with fair balance of kind of one side and the other, just seeing the evolution or the a balanced side of it, then I would probably like it more. But it's so heavily weighed on scary, 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 scary. You never see the other side, because there is always another side.
How do you then square that away with your like of shows like The Twilight Zone and No Limits? The Outer Limits, which did exactly the same thing.
They're more fantasy.
But they were telling stories that were cautionary in the sense, like, you know, there were stories about, you know, anti-nuclear war or whatever the story of the time, the thing of the time was, the fear of the time.
Because...
that they were trying to tell scary stories.
I don't know whether it's, like, time away, because I didn't see them when they actually aired, and it was kind of...
So by the time they aired, you saw them, they were safe.
The social commentary that's so prevalent in them is no longer resonates. So it's like, oh, it's, you know, going back to the late 70s and the Cold War and all of that stuff, and looking back on it now, we kind of look at, oh, it's kind of cute and quaint, and the genuine fear that was in society isn't there anymore. So having something like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, the original version of that was far more chilling than the Gary Oldman version that came out a couple of years ago. But the Gary Oldman version was still fantastic. It was definitely more fantasy though, because that world just doesn't exist.
This kind of supports my hypothesis,
mm,
that your tastes skew for to you. I don't think you want to see the world as it is or it could be. I think you're interested in escapism.
I prefer escapism.
And I'm not going to. I'm not sitting here and criticizing you for it.
I absolutely prefer escapism.
And that's, I guess, and that's just a question of taste. If you if you want to go in and forget about the world as it is,
mm,
I guess this is actually consistent though.
Mm.
You are not the fan of documentaries that I am, by any stretch of your imagination. Mm. You don't really care for documentaries. I fucking love documentaries. It's almost one of my favourite genres of film.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all actually lines up quite nicely,
yeah,
with my hypothesis,
mm-hmm,
that it's just a case of that this, I think, is telling us something about, I mean, in telling us something about the world today by telling us what the world could be. If I give it, interestingly, you fandom bleak.
Mm.
A good friend of mine actually criticised the new seasons being made for Netflix, that he feels they're far too upbeat and positive at happy endings. He doesn't like the fact that they
are... Colour-wise, yeah. You can see they're getting more money per episode.
No, literally happy endings. He's like, I found every episode of last season minus one, was Shut Up and Dance, had a happy ending.
Yeah, it's alright, they're okay.
And, he felt the same for the first episode of USS Callister of this season.
Mm.
So it's kind of ironic, it's actually kind of the other end of a spectrum from being too bleak, and he feels they're almost, the new seasons anyway, too Hollywood, of happy endings and upbeat.
I would probably agree with that. I think what I watched of season one was far more bleak and far more British than season 3 or 4, not only in colour palette and the, you know, the quality of the productions, but the USS Callister is kind of, it doesn't really have any outcome. There's nothing. These artificial cloned Ow, stop clawing my foot, you little devil. The artificial clones that go off into the sunset, what, the space set with the USS Callister, and how that ends, it's like, okay, he was living a non-entity life anyway, so he's not going to be missed. The crime has been deleted off.
He'd be missed because he's the, like, the technical lead at a very high-profile company.
But
so,
he won't. I mean, the interactions that all of
When you miss, will people care if he's gone?
No.
Someone will realise he's not at work. And
someone will realise that he's not there, but they won't give a shit.
They'll chase him.
One of them, I can't remember their names again, but yeah. One of them kind of says, you know, the new girl, she says, well, there's two bosses. And I'm like, oh, yeah, technically.
Yeah.
They don't give a fuck. He'll be replaced.
The takeaway, I'll pay that is, I mean, like, I didn't really think it was a happy ending, though. I mean, it's kind of more of a traditional Hollywood ending in the sense the bad guy gets his comeuppance.
I was expecting the Lost in Space music to come on.
but his consciousness will be trapped in absolute nothing. It'd be like it'd be almost like I always think of the Metallica film clip for One, where the guy for World War One soldier is basically awake but can't move.
Opening of Bloody Wolfenstein.
it's not a pleasant. It's certainly not a pleasant outcome for him.
But he's painted in such a bad light anyway that any empathy that you may have possibly had for
it's gone.
The first 10-15 minutes is gone entirely. And so it's like, good, fine. I will instantly be more interested if they do make a series and then he comes back into that world. He manages to escape that and get onto the online service somehow, somewhere, and just how that has fucked him up.
I really, really... I cannot speak and possibly express how much I hope that doesn't happen. Because that would betray everything this show is about. Because if you were going to make a spin-off of one of the episodes of this show, if you're going to make another episode about one of the episodes of this show, it has to be San Junipero. And I go back to my original point, you haven't watched Black Mirror until you've watched San Junipero. It's the best thing they've ever done.
Well, that's really disappointing for a TV series then.
And just because...
One episode out of four seasons now?
No, but it was like, you've obviously experienced part of it.
And the thing
about it is, and why I have a problem with people who go, I don't like it, is because every episode is a different story. And especially now, they have actual different directors. So Jodie Foster directed episode 2 of season 4, and it's about a mother and daughter. I know you're shocked. Well, I was shocked,
you know what?
Too.
I did pee myself a little in shock.
And you know what? Like, if I have a criticism of the latest season, it's a little predictable. Especially Jodie Foster's episode is a little predictable.
I don't think she's a very strong director.
I don't
think
she's a great director. I've never seen her do anything. It's amazing. Mm. But I'm going to say that this show is like, it's not like if you jump on the Dirk Gently, I assume it has a story arc at least.
Oh, 100%. You have to watch. You can't just jump in anyway. Ow! Stop calling me, you little bitch!
He agrees with me. But, say, this show, considering each episode is a self-contained story, and what I think was so... And I've actually... Some friends of mine, again, I talked to recently, said, I watched the first one, I didn't like it much, and again, I find it shocking because the first episode of both Nosedive and episode 1-1, the National Anthem of the Pig, are fucking brilliant. But then they're like, I just didn't like it much. And I'm like, have you seen San Junipero? And they said, no. I said, get it up. We're watching San Junipero. And their opinion did a 180. Because this show is like a spectrum. And it goes from, you sort of say, I think the National Anthem and some of those ones, White Bear in season 2, utterly bleak. Through to, well, I'm going to spoil it here, but the San Junipero just shows a completely different face, a completely different side of what the storytelling can do. So, at the very least, I feel like I would recommend watching that episode, and if you still hate the series after that, then I think it's very fair to walk away from it going, you're never going to like anything this series ever does ever again.
I have already said to myself that I am going to watch it. I wanted to just get this USS Callister out of the way.
It's actually been quite controversial as well. I think a lot of people, again, from our friends in the alt-right, didn't like it very much.
Oh, really?
They didn't care for it. Feminism, blah, blah, blah. But, It constantly shocks me.
Shut up, Riley.
It constantly shocks me the amount of people who don't get it. I guess you're probably right.
It's not that I don't get it. I can fully appreciate the quality of everything about it. It is well written and it is well produced and everything about it. I have not seen one performance in all of the episodes that I've seen that I thought, they didn't carry their weight or anything like that. It's just not what I go to where I want escapism. I can see all of these hypothetical paranoia scenarios in my head anyway. It's all like, seen it. Show me something else.
Misspoke. I think you get it, obviously. There are some people out there who just go, I don't necessarily agree, do get it.
It's not for me.
It's not, and I guess maybe it's not for everyone. It's a little bit more challenging than, if someone said to me my favourite show is The Big Bang Theory, this would not be my go-to list of stuff to recommend to them. if you love that show, then you're not going to like this show.
You know what? I think one of the big things that I have with it is, I can appreciate it in the same way that I appreciate Pi and Requiem for a Dream that we mentioned before. They're not movies that I want to go back to every 6 weeks or anything like that. They are kind of... like, I've watched Pi maybe 3 times maximum. Requiem for a Dream maybe 2 times. I love it. Don't need to see it anymore. It's kind of like, yep, that was a grueling endurance. I appreciated everything that went into it, but I don't put myself through that willingly. And so many people everywhere online are like, I fucking smashed through Black Mirror. Like, this is a show that you do not fucking smash through if you're in my kind of mindset.
I have to stop myself because I just love it so much, and like, it just does it. It just hits that sweet spot for me.
I just couldn't imagine it.
It makes me think. It challenges me. It shocks me. It's, and like, I have to stop myself because I'm like, ooh, only 3 more episodes to go. And I have to wait another fucking year. it's a little bit like those people who whinge about Game of Thrones. Like, at least you get a whole fucking season. I get 6 episodes.
Yeah, there's always a lot of down episodes in those
episodes. I don't know. I've never picked it up.
It's fine, but
this has confirmed, I think, my going in hypothesis. This is just not the kind of science fiction that you would normally... you might veer into it occasionally, and it might be...
love dabbling.
You'll dabble, and occasionally, for me, I don't particularly care for fantasy. So, I don't particularly care for a Lord of the Rings films. I didn't really like the Hobbit films, and I think that's because they weren't very good. But every now and again, like I said, I'm more Trek than I am Wars. Still love the Star Wars films.
Star Wars films I love. I really like most of the Star Trek films. And I really enjoy
the other one. Nobody likes Star Trek V. Don't be coming here and telling me you like.
I'm not saying I said all that most of it. Like the first one, it does it well.
It's kind of kitschy.
Wrath of Khan, fucking amazing. Then it's The Search for Spock.
The Voyage Home.
I appreciate The Search for Spock, even though it is fucking tacky. That's just comedy.
The Genesis trilogy in the middle of those films is pretty good.
Yeah.
And Voyage Home, I know it's like, it's kitschy and it's a comedy, but it's actually pretty good. I still think it holds up well.
Gotta respect Leonard Nimoy.
And of course, the nuclear whistles. I think that's it. So you think it's just a case of, if you don't want the real world throwing your face... then potentially this is not the show to watch. And I'm sure like you said, I think Electric Dreams might, if you're into a bit of sci-fi at the moment, if you're not enjoying Black Mirror, maybe try Electric Dreams.
Electric Dreams would be a perfect alternative.
It really is. It's telling a science fiction-y story, but it's not the real world, and it's not necessarily trying to preach to you.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are set more modern-day, present-day kind of thing, but even then, there's... a distance. It's not commentary.
It's not necessarily our world.
It's not kind of saying, oh yeah, do you remember that article that was on Facebook 2 months ago? Yeah, this is a story that takes that to a fucking horror. it's nothing like that. Unless you consider seeing Timothy Spall being ridiculously thin and horrific. And it kind of is. It's weird. I did get to see Jumanji.
So did I.
Oh, you did?
I did. I saw it last week because it was 42 degrees here in Melbourne. And me and everybody else in the northern suburbs had the same idea. Let's go to the cinema. It's air conditioned. What did you think of it?
Highly enjoyable blockbuster movie.
You're quite a fan of the original?
Yes, love it.
I think I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
I have very little memory of whether I liked it or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not as... I know it's actually surprised me. Now that this film's come out, obviously, it sort of brought back that memory of the original for a lot of people. Mm. I don't remember it as fondly as everybody else did. But, I remember thinking it was just yet another average Robin Williams film that he was making in the mid-90s. Toys, this.
Toys was not a good film. Stylistically, quite interesting, but... Mm.
This, I went in going, you know what, I didn't want to see this film. That there was nothing. It was this or Pitch Perfect 3.
Oh yeah.
I kind of liked
Star Wars again.
I'm not interested in that. I actually kind of liked it. You know what? Is it utterly predictable? Yes, it is.
Yes.
Is it hit every stereotypical beat you would expect?
Yeah.
Yes. Is the villain a bit meh?
Yes.
It's still a lot of fun though.
Yep. It's just fun. It's what you want from a kind of brainless blockbuster.
Let me just to sort of cover off the fact that I
shit. Sorry, everyone. Charles charged at the toilet door, which is closed, and just went splat on it, and then looked confused as if, well, why didn't I go through that?
I'm sure it's that scene where in the start of a menu stare at goats away saving. I'm going to walk through the wall now.
Yes, kind of that. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed Jumanji. When I first heard about it, probably 2015 or something, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson was going to star in it. Really? Are they going to shit on another one of my childhood movie memories? And then they kind of went, oh yeah, they're playing avatars in a computer game. Okay, that sounds pretty shitty. And then... watching it, the update of taking them into Jumanji made sense. It was fresh. It was different. It was rather than the real world being invaded by the stuff of Jumanji, like the first film. This was people from our world going in and seeing this fully functioning ecosystem within the world, and... you could kind of argue that this is currently the best video game movie.
I was just going to go there, actually. It's not got a lot of competition.
Not really.
But things I liked about it is, look, when we reviewed Wonder Woman last year, I think we reviewed Wonder Woman last year, one of the things I think...
fucking hell, your claws, Cap!
One of the things I liked about it is that Gal Gadot sticks to what she's good at.
Mm.
And I think Patty Jenkins knows what she's good at.
Yes.
And doesn't actually take her anywhere outside of that. You know, yes. It's like, she's not Meryl Streep.
No.
So, she sounds a bit...
ask her to be.
She's got a bit of a weird accent.
Yeah.
So, let's just work with what we've got. And I think she did that brilliantly. I am not one of these people who is saying, well, I think that should be nominated for an Academy Award.
Agreed, it's not.
It's not an Academy Award film. And neither should Gal Gadot be nominated for an Academy Award. I think maybe she should stick to the technicals. But it's a good film for that reason.
Yep.
I feel like The Rock knows what he's good at.
Yep.
He is reasonably good at comedy.
Yep.
He's quite good at action.
Yep.
And he's quite good at taking the piss out of himself.
Yep.
And tick, tick, tick.
Yep.
This is what this film does. 100%. Let's not try and get The Rock to, you know, display pathos or...
we're not going to get him to... you know what? The Rock in the remake of Serpico.
Citizen Kane. This is one citizen pushed too far.
God. I can see that happening, man.
The font will run into his paper. he is what he is. And let's stick with what he's good at.
Yep.
Because, you know, this is a lighthearted family blockbuster. Jack Black does a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah.
He's been a long time between hits for him. But... as a teenage girl trapped in the belly of a middle-aged fat guy, he does it brilliantly. His film, his role could have... Now, I don't know if it was written for him. Wouldn't surprise me if it was. Because, again, this is probably the best role I've seen Jack Black in... I can't Quite remember. A long time. Mm-hmm. He's funny. And he has great chemistry for Rock.
Mm-hmm.
I actually don't know who the other two actors are.
Kevin Hart.
Sorry, I should recognize him. He works quite well for Rock as well. I think they've done a couple.
They've worked together a few times, like Central Intelligence, and they seem to be very buddy on kind of like all the kind of
social media,
and you know the lip sync battles and things like that. I think.
Karen Gillan, was that her name?
Karen Gillan, yes. She was Nebula in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, wow.
And she was in Doctor Who, the season with...
The Weeping Angels?
Matt Smith. Yes.
Okay. I'd never seen her before. Obviously, I've seen her as Nebula, but I didn't recognise her.
Yeah.
She's very good, and she gets a lot of good lines in it as well. Like, her character is obviously...
Mm.
Her outfit is very inspired by, say, Lara Croft.
Yeah.
And she just sort of makes a bunch of comments. Why am I wearing this in the middle of the jungle? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So the character, I don't know if they've actually put a lot of thought into this, but the chemistry between the main cast members is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And they all seem to just be in roles that were written around and focus on their areas of strength.
Yeah.
And I think that's where this film is completely successful, is that you go in expecting things, it gives you what you expect, it does it very well and competently, and it's just entertaining.
Yeah.
People who might be listening who think my rant about Black Mirror and how important it is that I don't like escapist entertainment would, I think, be proven wrong now. I don't mind putting my brain into neutral and just going to enjoy a film.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what this movie is. It's not asking you any hard questions. It's not asking you to follow along on a complicated story or anything like that. It's just saying, hey, I'm going to show you some pretty visuals with a fine story, and you're just going to enjoy it.
It's a bit of a hack director.
Who is the director?
Jake Kasdan.
Who?
Jake Kasdan.
Okay.
He directed... Bad Teacher. One would think so, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, look, if you haven't seen it, it's been out for, what, 3 or 4 weeks now?
It's doing well.
I would be not surprised if they would make another one now.
Yeah, probably.
I quite enjoyed Rhys Darby's work in it as Nigel.
Yes.
And I like the way it played with a lot of video game stuff, like, oh, he's an NPC.
If you've played Skyrim or anything of the like, his dialogue is kind of like, oh, fuck, I've been in that loop.
Yeah, saying the same thing again. Disappointment of a film for me was Bobby Cannavale, who played the bad guy.
Yeah.
Van Pelt, who just, I mean...
Wait, was he playing... Was he actually Van Pelt?
Well, that's what the character name on IMDb is Van Pelt.
That's really disappointing because Jonathan Rice, I think, was the original Van Pelt. But
he's just like, you know, this is the kind of role that if this had been made 20 years ago, it would have been played by Billy Zane. Because
Jonathan Hyde, sorry.
He's utterly forgettable. He doesn't get... I mean, it's almost like they realised it during editing. I'm like, wow, this guy's really boring. Let's just cut everything out if he's done. Because he's just such a... Yeah, he's not in it much for the bad guy. And he pops up at the end and like, oh, okay, that guy.
And even at the end, it's kind of... Yep, saw every single step of this all the way, and yeah, he wasn't really that threatening.
Wasn't he going to play a bad guy in a comic book film at one point in time? Wasn't he going to be the... I'm thinking somebody else. Bobby Cannavale. But I must be thinking... I'm thinking of Joe Manigola, who's going to be playing the bad guy in something.
Okay.
Is it the next... The Batman.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Anyway, so look, I mean, I think you'd probably take the kids to it.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to a friend of mine recently who told me her kids were too scared to watch Guardians of the Galaxy, which is odd. But, you know, it's not for everybody, I guess.
Yeah. I think this is pretty...
I think
pretty
this fairly would, safe. This would be fairly safe. There was a scene of someone getting eaten by a hippo, so...
Yeah.
It could be a bit scary for younger kids, maybe.
But it's fairly quickly done with the kind of... an expressed version of what Marvel are very good at, where they have a very serious moment and then a little bit of comedy. The reintroduction of said character who gets eaten It's funny. It's fine. It's slapstick comedy. You know, you kind of have this, like, oh no, gone, and then, then fell on the
You probably saw the trailer, right? You saw it in the trailer, actually. I'm still a middle-aged fat guy, right?
Yeah,
it's completely uncontroversial, completely unchallenging, but on a day when it's 42 degrees in Melbourne, that's kind of all I was in the mood for.
Yep. That's it. It's all you need sometimes. Now, you mentioned that you played a little bit of State of Decay.
I have been playing quite a bit of State of Decay.
Now, I am very tempted by the co-op option that is going to be coming into State of Decay 2.
I think State of Decay 2 is actually out, isn't it?
No, it's coming out this year. It's coming out sometime after June.
God, they're going to be sitting on their hands. It's been like 5 years since this game came out.
But they've been fairly frequently updating it, and it was actually a really small team that produced it.
Yeah, but this was the high... So State of Decay was released in June of 2013. It was, at the time, and it probably still is an Xbox exclusive initially. Yes, I think it's on PC now.
Yeah.
But it was actually, when it came out, the fastest selling game in Microsoft Arcade... Xbox Arcade history.
Yeah.
This is the zombie sandbox game you've always wanted.
Mm.
We know we've always wanted, and yet gaming studios have refused to deliver until probably fairly recently.
Yeah.
There are a lot of these type of games now on especially on Steam, which I really haven't been bothered to try because instead I really enjoy this coming back
not
to this
on
game.
Consoles, it's not worth playing.
No, I'm sure it's fine. It's just, I don't know, like, you're all, like, we're in pre-development, we're in alpha, you know, and you're like, so many games get to alpha, and they get people buy them, and then they just stop making them, because they've got your money.
So how is PUBG?
Well, I think, I know that they're still working on that. I actually haven't picked it up since this year, because I've just been stuck on State of Decay. They had a sale on Xbox, and had the year one edition, and so it had that, and State of Decay, the original game, plus the two expansions.
Okay.
Good
amount of content.
It was, and it was like $7. So it was good value. So think of this game if you really liked the game Dead Rising games.
Oh yeah.
Though it's less funny and less ridiculous as that, less crafting.
Because it's
more of actually not really a zombie game. It's actually really a base management game.
Yeah, that's what.
And almost like an RPG in a lot of ways. Because you land, you start as the main State of Decay game. You're a character. You start. On a riverside, you just come finish the canoeing trip. You've been gone for 2.5 weeks or something. And each time, the world's gone to shit.
It's amazing what happens when you go canoeing.
And you have to beat the shit out of a couple of zombies who are trying to eat you when you get out of a canoe. And then you sort of work your way up to the ranger station, meet some people. And then from there, you sort of learn what's gone on. And you've got to you basically learn the mechanics of the game from there. You have to go into town. You have to establish a base. You have to kind of upgrade and maintain that base while also scavenging for food, ammo, fuel, construction materials. And you're also, at the same time, you're going out and doing missions, like you got to go out and try and save survivors, help your neighbors so that they'll hopefully like you enough that they'll join your group. Eventually, you sort of outgrow your little base and you'll have to relocate at some point. There's the armies floating around doing crazy shit. There are, you know, there are special zombies who start to show up a little bit more as the game progresses.
Sounds like an odd combination of The Walking Dead and some kind of Age of Empires.
It's not like it's not like your traditional sort of real time strategy.
Okay.
It is. It's more like I said, base management.
Mm.
So you'll go, well, oh, we'd be so much easier to defend this place if we had a watchtower. So you'll have to
build a
watchtower. But it'll be like, oh, shit, we need that thing to finish building the watchtower. Could you go out and get us the thing? You know, that kind of stuff. Or,
I get
you. Yeah. And you're like, we don't need enough blah to build that thing.
Okay.
At the same time, as I said, you've got, you go out and you can sort of search houses and stuff. And the really great thing about this game I like is the vast majority of the buildings in this game you can actually break into and explore and loot.
Okay.
And stuff. And so it's not like other games where you go, oh, no, we want you to go here. You've got free roam to do whatever the fuck you want. Cars are great. They're a little fragile, but, you know, they are very useful for killing zombies.
Okay.
Permadeath.
Okay.
So if your character dies, they are kaputsky.
Is it like the similar situation? It's kind of popular in like Dark Souls and things like that, where you can kind of encounter a zombified version of yourself?
Nothing like that. So I think it's just set in the real world to the greatest extent possible.
With permadeath, you then roll a new character?
So there are 6 or 7 characters. You can swap between them.
Oh, okay.
So you can swap between the characters. And I guess the idea the game wants you to do is you would then share out the missions you're doing between your characters so you can slowly skill them up.
Okay.
And so you can level up their skills. You get better at fighting. You get better at shooting. You get better at running.
Okay.
But more often than not, you've got probably about 2 characters who have reasonable skills to start with. And you keep switching between the 2 of them.
Okay.
As one of them gets tired or injured, you switch to the other one. Because they've already got good fighting skills. And you go, really going to go back to a 1-star fighting character who can't do shit? No, I don't think so. But if you lose one of those guys who you've skipped leveled up, you're fucking ropeable. And I guess the ultimate goal is to escape the valley that you're trapped in.
Okay.
And I actually did manage to finish it recently. Yeah. Some would say it's a little easy. Once you sort of get the swing of it, it is kind of difficult to, you know, it's not that difficult to sort of survive.
Okay.
You know, there are certain zombies out there which are fucking hard to kill, but, you know, smart use of cars, you can take them out pretty easy.
Okay.
I've probably sunk another probably 70, 80 hours into it since Christmas. It's just addictive.
Okay.
So there are a couple other games I can't remember the exact name
games
of the.
As a service?
Sorry?
Games as a service.
No, so the expansions that come with it. Breakdown is one.
Yeah.
Breakdown is basically a free roam.
Okay.
Which is not really that cool, actually.
Right.
It's okay. Except that the thing is, you build up a base, you discover an RV, you repair the RV, and you try and escape, and the RV will break down somewhere, and you start again.
Oh.
But as you start again, you got to build your base again, it gets a little bit harder every time. There are less cars, there are less supplies, there are more zombies, there are more special zombies, which are hard to kill and more dangerous. Nope. And you're like, so it's basically a glorified wave mode. It's okay. And it doesn't really explain itself so well. And you're like, after about 2 of them, you're like, oh, okay, I'm not getting out of here, am I? It's just going to get harder and harder.
Okay.
And the last one being Lifeline, which is a completely new story.
Story content.
A new map, which is nice. And it's all about some army soldiers who are trying to survive and at the same time escape and save people and stuff. And it's actually a lot harder than the original game. So I actually lost 2 very valuable characters this afternoon, which quit a rage quit. This game originally was supposed to have co-op. They just scoped it. It's disappointing, I think, that they didn't put it back in for one of the DLCs, because that would be fun.
Yeah.
I think it has to put down. It's ugly.
Mm.
It still looks like a 360 game.
Yeah.
Like, zombies clip through walls and stuff. It makes it fucking hard. Like, you see, he's on the other side of it. Oh, no, he's not. that kind of thing. Like, sometimes your car will get stuck places and stuff, and you're like, oh, I guess.
All right.
And then the game would just sort of sit there for a minute and go, huh? And then, like, you walk past 2 minutes later, and it'll just, like, explode.
All right. I've been playing kind of the opposite. I've been playing a charming little indie game called Battle Chef Brigade on the Nintendo Switch, and it's also on Steam, I believe. It's essentially a match 3 game, but it's got a heavy story focus told in kind of a visual novel manner where you are training to become a battle chef. In this world, the battle chefs are essentially the best of the best. They are the people that kind of work on medicine, on technology, on defense, everything. They are the government unified force kind of thing. And you're going through the training school to get there. And part of that is you go out on hunting trips to kill monsters to get the ingredients for your meals that you cook, which becomes the match 3 game. Really simple idea, but the puzzles and the challenges just get harder and harder, and the each time you have to kind of have like at the end of each level, as it were, you have to have a face-off, a cooking challenge, and you have to satisfy the requirements of the judges. Like, they'll say, oh, I want something that's got real fire in it. Another one will say, I want something that's got more earthy, watery tones to it. But for all three, all of the ingredient, all of the chefs, they have to include one particular monster part. So you have to make sure you go and get that and incorporate that into it, and then it's about distilling it down, upgrading each of the flavor colors to get the maximum points. It's really fun. Took about 10 hours to complete it. Highly enjoyable. I really hope that the guys behind it get a chance to do it as like a 16-bit RPG style thing going forwards, because it would be really cool to have a broader story. The story is quite good, but slightly more wide-reaching story where you get to actually go out and experience and fight in more diversified locations. There's a couple. I think there's three areas that you can hunt in. It'd be really cool to actually go to a few more variations and bring that back, and it could work really quite nicely. But highly enjoyable. It's like $15 on the eShop, something like that. So
well, for $15,
yeah, for $15, they did a really good job. It's fully voice acted as well. It's nice. It's good. And then on the opposite end of the scale, I've been playing Never Stop Sneaking. This was a Kickstarter game, and it's essentially a parody of Metal Gear Solid on the PlayStation. And it's too easy. Way too easy, because you aren't firing. Everything is automatic. A bad guy will be walking towards you, and in old school Metal Gear Solid fashion, you see like a light cone coming out from their field of vision. Yeah. And you just have to stay out of it, to the point where you can literally just hide behind a pipe and they will walk past you. And as long as you walk into them without them seeing, you'll kill them with a knife. If you do get seen, if you've got bullets, which are fairly rare, you'll shoot them. If you get caught by a CCTV camera or a laser turret or something like that, you'll automatically set off an EMP, as long as you've got them. It's really boring. The parody element of it is kind of funny, but it's dumb parody. It's not smart parody, so you kind of go, that's good. It's like, okay. So I recommend avoiding Never Stop Sneaking and playing Battle Chef Brigade instead.
If that's what you're into. Or you can pick up a cute copy of State of Decay if you're into a little bit of base building and zombie squatting.
Yeah, but you can't play that on the toilet.
This is true.
Mm-hmm. That's why all games should come to Switch.
Yes, well, maybe.
Yes.
I don't know if it's the kind of game, but we'll be using Nintendo R, expanding their horizons a little bit with games that are a little bit more adult-oriented.
They've Doom got and Wolfenstein such. 2 coming Doom out soon.
I don't think it's... Well, it's an Xbox exclusive, so I guess it's not coming to Switch anytime soon.
That will come to Switch the day that Zelda comes to Xbox.
Well, I guess unless you can play it in the toilet where, like last week, Xbox, the Microsoft guys, started to rip off Nintendo like they usually do.
Mm-hmm.
We said last week that they motion control came in for Wii.
Then we had to move. That's true.
And then so like now that Nintendo have changed the game again with like a mobile-ish console. Sony and PlayStation, Sony and Microsoft now try and somehow replicate that?
I don't think they're Like I said last time, I don't think they will. PlayStation has definitely doubled down on
VR. But that Sony do make mobile phones.
Not really anymore.
Yeah, they do.
Sony Ericsson's.
Well, no one buys them. They still make them.
That's what happened with the Move. That was another failed experiment by PlayStation.
Add that to make a Kinect. The Kinect might be the lamest thing since the Power Glove.
No, Virtual Boy.
Oh, yes, I saw one of them in Japan.
Oh, Jesus. Wear this if you want a headache within 10 seconds. On that note, we'll take a quick break, shall we?
Sure.
All right. And we are back. Now, what do you want to do next conversation. Do you want to talk about Aldous
Harding? Let's knock off Aldous Harding, because okay. I thought we've been trying to incorporate more music into the show, as regular listeners might be aware.
Yeah.
Last week we talked about one of the best records I think we both enjoyed significantly, Gary Numan's new record.
Yep.
This week I was recommended by a musician I'm quite a fan of, that Aldous Harding, the young New Zealand gothic folk musician is what she describes herself as.
Okay.
That she had released one of the albums of the year last year, and he actually covered one of her songs at a concert I saw recently, and I thought, I'll give it a burl. So I got a copy of her record, and I put it in the car. And my initial impressions of a song that he covered was, this is awful. But it actually really grew on me quickly into the stuff that was stuck in my head for days. And I really tried to spend some more time with the rest of her record.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I don't think the rest of the record is up to the same standard. The song in question is a song called Horizon. The album is called Party, which is probably quite a strange one, really, considering it...
Listening to the tone of every single song on this album, I don't really want to go to that party. Here's a little bit of Horizon, just so that people can get a taste. First
30
seconds of
Horizon. So that's quite I think it's very sort of Kate Bushy. A little bit of Björk in there. Yeah. Obviously, you can see a little bit of the influence of someone like Lorde. But it's not exactly a get up and party album. It's quite a nice song. Like I said, I found it needed a couple of listens to really get my head around it. It's by far the standout track on the album.
I couldn't get through the album.
Don't worry, I don't like this record. I wonder myself, if you're a music critic, it must be a hard thing about being a music critic, and someone says, could you please review this folk music album?
Yeah.
I don't like folk music, but, I mean, do you have to like everything if you're... Like, it's hard to criticise it, because, like, it's not the kind of music I would normally listen to. It's a little bit too... morose?
Yeah.
Sorry?
Melancholy.
Very melancholy. And not in an interesting way.
It's not as if it's kind of like Tom York. His stuff is fucking suicidal. But there's more interesting stuff to it. He's got layers of instrumental and sound that go with it that at least engage you in other ways. But this is so kind of pulled back to just vocals and piano on so many occasions. It's kind of,
it does get a little bit samey, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Every song apart from Horizon sounds the same to me. I feel like she uses a different tone of voice on Horizon than she does on her other ones, which are a little bit more...
Well, the difference between, I think, is the first two tracks. One of them, she's singing really low, and then she's singing much higher, and the second track is like, is this... I can tell that this is the same person, but... What the shit? Really? Okay. Are we going to get more of this? Nah. She experiments and then that's kind of it.
I guess it's a short review in that sense. And like, wow, this was difficult to listen to. I know, I'm sure...
There's only 9 songs, 39 minutes. That's the longest 30-odd minutes of my life.
It's like, okay, like you sort of... I was listening to it again while I was driving here. And it was like, oh, this has been going for a while. Oh, wow, it's still the first song.
Yeah.
I guess if you really like the kind... If you really into Kate Bush, if you like Björk, if you like Lorde and that kind of things, maybe if you really like folk music, maybe give it a go. It might be more to your taste than mine. But like I said, the artist who recommended it, I'm like, wow, really? That's the best New Zealand had to put out last year?
Yeah.
Poor year for New Zealand.
Yeah. And she says classics in a really weird way. Like in the song "Living the Classics," "Living the Classics."
She's
like Cartman.
She's an interesting character. I'll pay that. It's worth watching some of her live performances just to sort of get a real picture of what I'm talking about.
I imagine that it'd probably be quite a different experience hearing her perform this album live.
Actually, you know what I did? I listened to some of her live ones, and I here's why, as on YouTube, and I thought, yeah, these songs are alright. I might really like the album.
Mm.
I think I don't really like the album versions anywhere near as much.
Yeah, yeah.
I would like to propose.
Sweet Jesus, what cause?
I would like to propose a different record, a change in direction for next week.
Okay.
Our musical challenge.
Mm.
A friend of mine recommended this group to me this week, and I'd never heard of them.
Mm.
That's how up to date I am, because apparently they're huge.
Okay.
Run the Jewels.
Run the Jewels. Okay, haven't heard of them.
Nope, so it's not just me then.
Where
are you? They are American? I think they're American. And you won't actually recognize them because they use one of their songs in the latest Black Panther clip.
Okay.
It's Legend Has It. But their new record, or most recent record, I think from a couple of years ago, Run the Jewels 3.
Okay.
Might actually, you know, I don't know, how do you feel about hip hop?
I've not listened to too much of it, but I'm open to it.
Well, we're going to be say hip and relevant, right? Hip and relevant with the kids, and
well, yeah, I was never relevant with my own peers, so
a bit of it. PB&J, we dropped the classic today. We did a tablet of asses today. The joint with the matches and ashes away. We dash away. Donna and Dixon, the pistol is back in the way. Doctors of death, killing our patients of blood. We are the kind of thing. Right, I recognize the tune. I actually, having listened to that song a couple of times, when I saw the latest Black Panther film, the preview, I'm like, that's Run the Jewels.
Okay.
I feel so hip now, I actually know
you
one of
you are in tune
with the kids. Society. But we've done rock, we've done gothic folk, let's go to hip-hop.
Yep.
That's what the kids are listening to.
This is going to challenge me, because it's definitely not a type of music that I traditionally hear. You know what I fancy? Maybe I'll pick out a blues album.
I like blues, so yeah. Mm. I mean, look, but we should probably try and do that. We should try and be challenging ourselves.
Absolutely.
And stuff, and not just be going, talking about records we know we love.
Yeah.
I
did that when I listened to Kendrick Lamar's latest album.
I have listened to that as well. I like Humble, but the rest of it's awful.
It was
alright. I have a couple of Eminem records.
Oh yeah,
some of his stuff's okay, but
yeah.
Generally speaking, hip hop clubs not like make up the meat of my musical diet.
Mm-hmm.
What you know?
Say
what?
That five times.
That's not. I lost a bet recently.
Yeah, you did.
And
I'm so happy about it.
The outcome of that bet was that I had to, and we kind of agreed that I probably lost the bet, because determining who actually lost the bet turned out harder.
You were not weaseling out of it.
I didn't weasel out of it. I took my punishment. I took my licks. So it was about who the gross for Star Wars in the first week. And we think...
The Australian gross.
We think it was over $28 million.
Yes.
So we think you won.
Mm.
You're certainly a lot closer.
For sure.
Please, if you find a source, I think we could...
Because
we could,
I will
then it'll be double punishment for... so the outcome of this was I had to watch the Netflix-exclusive movie, A Christmas Prince.
Is it fair to call it a movie?
Yes.
Okay.
It has moving pictures and dialogue. It goes for 90 minutes. So, yeah, it's... Generally, that's what you define a movie as.
So like, no, I refer to it as porn, or I refer to it as torture.
Christmas porn.
Christmas porn. That turkey looks nasty.
It probably exists. You know it exists. That's a rule.
It's true.
When a reporter goes undercover as a tutor to get the inside scoop on a Playboy prince, she gets tangled up in royal intrigue and ends up finding love, but we should be able to keep up her lie.
Oh.
So it stars Rose McIver as Amber, who our co-producer Shay kindly pointed out to me is actually apparently the star of iZombie.
Yes, and she was also a Power Ranger.
Was she really?
Yes, she was.
It also stars, you have a familiar face for me, which instantly stood out, was that of Alex Krige, who would be best known to pretty much everybody as the Borg Queen from First Contact.
That's where I know her.
Yeah, I had to Google it as well. I'm like, I know that face from somewhere.
The face, fuck me, yeah.
Yeah, and so she's actually obviously quite a malevolent character in First Contact. And this, she's quite a benevolent character. So that's actually quite a difficult, it's a difficult transition to make in my head, but you're the Borg Queen. The way I describe this to everybody who's asked about it is, this film is disgustingly wholesome.
Oh.
So, it's so fucking wholesome. Okay. Like, this is like, this is, I mean, I guess it's a film on Netflix about Christmas. It's not going to be, it's not going to have too many, you know, beheading scenes or anything like that, you know. It's so straight down the line. Yeah. It's so middle of the road. It's so fucking vanilla.
Some of the like, bits in the trailer and some of the stills that I'm looking at, they kind of look like they're trying to do almost, especially the stuff in the palace, it looks almost reminiscent of Beauty and the Beast kind of thing, of that fairy tale life kind of element.
Is well, it's not. It is set in the real world. Amber is an up and comer, sort of an intern at some sort of publication in America in New York, and she gets sent to Upper Combustor West. I don't know where the fuck this fictional country is. To cover the possible abdication of Prince Richard, played by Ben Lamb, who is supposed to be replacing his dead father as king, but he is reluctant to take the throne, and there are rumors around that he will abdicate. And when she gets there, she doesn't. There's no story, basically. And so she has to go back to the United States, and she's like, I don't want to do that. I want to be a big-time reporter. So she basically, as the description said, she lies and says she's the new tutor for the princess. Emily, played by Anna Knefcy? It's an unusual name. And who has spina bifida and is in a wheelchair.
Okay.
Just to sort of pump up the, you know, aww.
The feels.
And turns out that she gets along really well with the young girl, gets along with Prince Richard, who's not the playboy everybody thought he was, and he's just actually a thoroughly decent man. And predictably, they end up falling in love.
What?
And there's intrigue, and he's like, his brother is like trying to, his cousin or something, he's trying to usurp the throne. And he's just like, and they just like, they play even like the most horrible characters, like, ooh, they're so evil, I hate them. You know, and it's not the worst film I've ever seen. It was a relatively benevolent 90 minutes. It was, you know, it wasn't as boring as, say, the Dirty Dancing films. Marmaduke, the film.
We can list off some truly terrible
films. We've seen some awful stuff.
I like the fact that like a week after this was put on Netflix, Netflix Twitter account put out a thing. So to the five people who have watched The Christmas Prince five times already, are you okay?
Yeah, who hurt you? It's like, some people are crazy. You've watched this 67 times. Like, who hurt you? I did. They've got a sense of humor down there at Netflix.
Yes,
it's fluff. You know, I mean, I'm trying to think of the films, the Christmas films I liked when I was a kid. I really liked Santa Claus the movie.
The Dudley Moore
film. A film like Scrooged. It's a funny Christmas film. But yeah, this is trying to do something a little different, I guess. And, you know, your kids are probably going to, your little girls, I imagine, maybe little boys as well, are going to enjoy sort of, you know, the royal trappings and the romance and stuff. Like I said, it's flawlessly wholesome. It's like, I was a bit surprised I didn't see Kirk Cameron's name somewhere in the production stuff. Like, Kirk and his mates would be all over this. Yeah, he must have been. He must have been. Kirk, we'll ask him on Twitter.
Yeah.
I took my punishment. It wasn't the worst punishment. But as you sort of noted, it did earn a one-finger salute. It did require half a bottle of gin to get through.
Now, do you have any thoughts on Next Challenge at all? Have you given it any thought? Or shall we leave that to the social medias to work
with? Well, yes, yeah, so I'll have to have a think about it, but you know, there's plenty of Drek on Netflix to dredge up, which I think it was another Christmas film in there, wasn't there? A Christmas Wish? Was it a Christmas Wish?
No more Christmas movies. We are past it. No. No, you cannot use the nuclear button every single time.
Well, there are many. You type in Christmas on Netflix. Beethoven's Christmas Adventure! No, I couldn't.
Just because it has David Duchovny doesn't mean it's good, much like Red Shoe Diaries.
Holes. we'll whack it up on the Fried Brains Productions Facebook page for those who are playing at home. And I think you'll be telling people in a second all about that again.
Mm-hmm. I will, in fact, because we have come to the end. We spent way more time on what we've been watching in Black Mirror than I thought we would. But that's fine. Thank you so much for tuning in, everyone. Thank you, Trav, for providing actual useful insight.
That's a first.
Well, that's usually... You usually do bring the more solid, reasoned, thought-out ideologies behind your things, and I'm just an excitable squirrel on helium. So remember that you can be part of the show by joining the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/FriedBrainProductions and reach out to us on Twitter, Evil Trav and The Fried Brain. Lastly, Fried Brain Productions is available on SoundCloud, Stitcher and Wooshka for everyone who isn't on Apple devices. If you could do us a favor and subscribe and give us a review or like us, that would be really good for visibility. So, yeah, that's it. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you for listening.
All right. Speak soon. Bye.